Hello and welcome to this deep dive into what's happening in Morocco. Hold on tight, because today we're exploring some really fascinating intersections. Technology, economic shifts, social issues, how they all meet and, well, evolve right before our eyes.
Exactly. We've sifted through quite a stack of sources for you, the listener, including the iWeek N Degree 80 publication, to pull out the most crucial bits, the really revealing insights.
Our mission, as always, is pretty simple. Give you a clear, engaging understanding of the trends shaping Morocco today, but without, you know, grounding you in information. Hopefully you'll have a few aha moments along the way.
Absolutely. And maybe we should kick things off with something that's, well, hitting everyone's wallets. Yeah. Fuel prices.
Right. After Ramadan, there was this hope, wasn't there, that prices might ease up a bit.
Yeah. But the reality has been quite different. It's causing a lot of frustration, even anger. And you can understand why.
Because even with a slight dip, pump prices are still stubbornly high. It sort of defies basic economic logic, as the National Union of Petroleum and Gas has been pointing out pretty forcefully.
Exactly. The core issue isn't that tiny decrease we saw. It's that the price level just doesn't seem to line up with what international market fluctuations would suggest.
Which, you know, raises that fundamental question about how our market actually works. We hear the explanations about global volatility.
But the union argues, and it seems quite convincingly, that that argument doesn't really hold water. They point to other countries in the region where price changes are much more moderate. So why the big difference here?
And that brings us right to the heart of it, doesn't it? The actual structure of Morocco's fuel market. Since prices were liberalized back in 2015, it's been dominated by private operators.
And the union, along with consumer groups, they're saying there's just not enough competition. They suspect excessive profit margins are being taken, and maybe the regulations aren't strong enough to, well, keep things in check.
Think about the knock-on effects for everyday life. High fuel prices aren't just about the gas station.
No, it's a chain reaction. Transportation costs go up, moving goods around gets more expensive, and that feeds directly into the price of basic necessities, hitting ordinary Moroccans hard, and frankly, making inequality worse. It's a tough cycle.
So with this growing frustration, what solutions are on the table?
Well, the union is pushing hard for stricter market regulation, definitely more transparency on profit margins. Some people are suggesting bringing back partial subsidies, at least to help the most vulnerable households.
And then you have the more, let's say, radical view, maybe renationalizing the energy sector entirely.
But each of those options faces pretty big hurdles. Budget-wise, bringing back subsidies would put a major strain on public finances. And politically, intervening heavily in a liberalized market, well, that opens up a whole complex debate.
So the government's caught in a really tricky balancing act, isn't it? Trying to manage the deficit while also protecting people's purchasing power.
It's a very fragile balance. And the risk, you see, is that if concrete steps aren't taken soon, this public frustration could really solidify. It could become a symbol of wider discontent.
Okay, let's shift gears now to something perhaps a bit more optimistic. Morocco's ambition to become a major tech hub in Africa. GITEX Africa 2025 seems central to this.
Absolutely. GITEX Africa 2025 is shaping up to be a really pivotal event, not just for Morocco, but for the whole continent. We're talking about, what, over 800 startups expected?
Yep.
And 350 investors.
That's huge. It sounds like a unique chance for networking, sharing ideas, creating some real synergy within that innovation ecosystem.
And startups are just fundamental to this digital transformation, aren't they? They bring the fresh ideas, the solutions that are often perfectly tailored to local challenges. GITEX gives them this incredible platform.
A platform to show their projects to an international audience, including those crucial investors. It could really open doors for partnerships and funding, help them scale up.
Exactly. The goal is bigger than the event itself. It's about really catalyzing Africa's innovation potential.
And it sounds like artificial intelligence, AI, is going to be front and center at this GITEX edition.
Yes, definitely. AI is now widely seen as this powerful driver of innovation across so many sectors. Health, agriculture, energy, you name it. It's interesting that Morocco has already integrated AI into its tech roadmap toward 2030. That shows clear strategic thinking.
Even if Africa is maybe a bit behind some other regions in AI right now.
The potential for growth is immense. GITEX Africa aims to be that catalyst, providing a space for discussion, sharing expertise, collaboration, really pushing AI forward on the continent, moving from just using AI to actually creating and innovating with it.
And what about agritech and green energy? Those seem like key areas for Morocco too.
Absolutely critical. They offer huge potential to boost the economy while tackling environmental challenges. Agritech can really transform farming practices, improve productivity, boost food security.
And green energy is fundamental for the country's energy transition.
Right. So GuideTechs becomes this golden opportunity to attract investors to these specific fields and really spotlight the pioneering companies already working in agritech and green energy.
It's encouraging to hear about the growing enthusiasm around Moroccan and African startups in general.
There's a real buzz. You see more and more young, bold entrepreneurs adapting international models to local realities very cleverly. And investor interest is definitely growing. Even former top athletes are getting involved, bringing not just money, but also visibility and credibility. That's a strong signal of confidence.
So what specific things is Morocco doing to support these startups, especially for GuideTechs 2025?
Well, there's close collaboration with the Ministry of Digital Transition. They're offering tailored support programs, incubators, co-working spaces, all designed to help these young companies emerge and grow.
And infrastructure, that must be key too.
Huge efforts there. Developing high-performance data centers, rolling out 5G. These are essential foundations for tech startups to thrive.
Which brings us to the crucial question of data security in this rapidly expanding digital world.
It's an absolute priority. Morocco seems fully aware that guaranteeing the security of personal and commercial information is vital. So they're developing robust digital infrastructure alongside regulations to protect data. Think strict security standards for data centers, rigorous protocols for information management. Trust is fundamental here.
So if Chaquip Atur from the source material had a key message for young entrepreneurs thinking about GuideTechs,
he'd strongly encourage them to see it as a golden opportunity to make their voices heard, connect with investors and partners, really showcase their creativity and innovation. He seems very bullish on the tech potential of Morocco and Africa generally.
A promising tech future then. But we need to switch tracks again to something more concerning. Recent cybersecurity alerts affecting the country.
Yes, unfortunately. On April 8, 2025, a group of Algerian hackers calling themselves Jabarut claimed responsibility for some pretty significant cyber attacks targeting Morocco.
The first claim involved the Ministry of Economic Inclusion's website, right? Though the ministry tried to downplay it initially.
They did, saying it was just an informational site, no sensitive data compromised. However, later reports, particularly from the outlet Le Desk, suggested something much more serious.
The claim was that Jabarut had actually managed to directly compromise servers belonging to the National Social Security Fund, the CNSS.
Exactly. And if that turns out to be true, we're talking about an exceptionally serious cybersecurity crisis. Mm. Just imagine the kind of sensitive information potentially accessed.
The alleged scale is worrying talk of over 500,000 listed companies, tens of thousands of PDF files extracted, mass salary certificates, confidential data concerning major institutions like the Mohammed VI Fund for Investment, banks, press organizations.
And even the Israeli liaison office in Morocco. The fallout from such a massive data breach could be huge, economically and in terms of information security.
The potential damage to the reputation of Moroccan institutions regarding data protection could be severe, couldn't it? It raises serious questions about IT security levels in critical entities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a geopolitical dimension, too, targeting the Israeli liaison office specifically. Well, that could be interpreted as a political signal related to the normalization of relations between Rabat and Tel Aviv. Cybersecurity is becoming cyber diplomacy.
What's striking, though, is the relative silence from Moroccan authorities on these claims, apart from that initial downplaying by the Ministry of Employment about their own site.
That lack of clear communication tends to fuel anxiety and speculation, doesn't it?
It really does. And it leaves us with some critical questions. Is this an isolated incident, or are we seeing the start of some kind of digital conflict? Is Morocco prepared for this new battlefield?
And crucially, what lessons need to be learned right now to strengthen digital infrastructure and prevent future vulnerabilities?
Mm.
Vigilance and investment in cybersecurity seem more critical than ever.
Okay, let's shift focus completely now to a local urban development issue causing quite a stir in Saleh. Controversial demolitions in the old city, the Medina.
Yes. Reports of bulldozers taking down old buildings in the Larifa and Batana neighborhoods, including the well-known Zarmouk Hotel near Bab Septa.
The official line seems to be that residents were informed and relocated to new housing in Saleh al-Jadida.
But the residents involved tell a very different story. They claim they were given assurances the buildings would be renovated as part of a Medina rehabilitation program, with promises they could return afterwards.
And the sudden demolition of the Zarmuk Hotel by a private company, apparently linked to a new owner, has caused particular anger and dismay.
You can feel the sense of betrayal among the displaced residents. They describe it as a hasty operation, without clear justification. There are fears that these Medina upgrade projects are being, well, hijacked for private real estate interests.
They're demanding transparency about decisions affecting this national heritage zone and feel they've been treated unjustly. The trust between residents and local institutions seems badly damaged.
That breakdown of trust is particularly worrying because residents insist promises weren't kept. They're understandably anxious about their future, worried they won't find decent housing again after being forced out of homes their families might have lived in for generations.
And there are calls for an independent inquiry into how the demolition permit was granted, right? To ensure transparency and try to prevent similar situations.
Exactly. This specific case highlights broader concerns about Medina rehabilitation programs across Morocco. Local associations worry these projects, meant to preserve heritage and improve lives, might be getting diverted by real estate lobbies.
What these associations are pushing for is genuine resident involvement in managing these projects. They stress that valuing heritage shouldn't come at the expense of the long-term residents who are, in many ways, its guardians.
It's a really sensitive issue.
Let's circle back briefly to fuel prices, but this time focusing specifically on the consumer impact and a particular figure that's been mentioned.
Right. The claim from the National Union of Petroleum and Gas is that Moroccan motorists have effectively been overpaying by at least 2 dirhams per liter since prices were liberalized in 2015.
How do they justify that figure?
They point to what they see as a clear disconnect between pump prices and what those prices should be based on international crude oil rates and the dirham-dollar exchange rate.
Using April's figures as an example, they argued diesel shouldn't have exceeded about 9.73 dirhams per liter and gasoline around 11.12. But actual prices in Casablanca were around 11.41 or even higher.
And the union squarely blames poorly regulated liberalization for this surfacturing, as they call it. They believe it allows distributors to inflate margins without effective government intervention.
It's worth remembering, isn't it, that the Competition Council itself has raised alarms about this and called for regulatory changes.
Yes, and even the government spokesperson, Mustafa Baitis, publicly acknowledged some imprudences in the liberalization reform that might have led to abuses.
So the pressure for action is mounting. The Moroccan Association for Human Rights condemned what it sees as consumers being abandoned to big oil companies.
And the union is essentially calling for a return to a more regulated system, questioning if the market was truly ready for full liberalization in the first place.
The bottom line seems pretty clear then.
Until this issue of potential overcharging is seriously addressed with concrete measures, it looks like Moroccan drivers will continue to face price hikes that feel unjustified based on the underlying economics.
Okay. On a more positive economic note, there was a brief mention in the sources about Morocco potentially emerging as an industrial hub, especially given current global trade tensions and tariffs. Details seemed a bit sparse, though.
Yes, just a pointer, really, suggesting it's a trend worth watching. Morocco positioning itself perhaps as an attractive manufacturing base amidst shifting global supply chains. Something to keep an eye on.
Great. And now, for something completely different, the case of Ibtihal Aboussaad, a Moroccan engineer calling for a boycott of Microsoft products.
Yeah, an interesting story. Her motivation stems from denouncing the use of technologies and actions she considers violations of fundamental human rights, specifically linking it to the Palestinian issue and accusations against certain international companies.
It taps into a broader trend, doesn't it? Employees at large corporations becoming more vocal about ethical and social issues.
Absolutely. And it touched on those complex debates around the involvement of AI systems in military interventions and the ethical responsibilities of tech giants. Microsoft's decision to end her contract then raises questions about the balance between corporate economic imperatives and individual humanitarian beliefs.
It definitely highlights the challenges around employee freedom of expression, especially when publicly opposing an employer on sensitive issues.
Could her action encourage others to speak out and challenge corporations on their ethical responsibilities? It's certainly a question worth considering.
Okay, moving to another positive economic indicator. Casablanca and Marrakech are apparently on track to become significant global wealth centers.
That's right. According to a recent report by Henley & Partners, both cities are ranked among the top 100 globally expected to host the most centimillionaires individuals with at least $100 million in liquid assets by 2035.
Do we know the current numbers?
Currently, Marrakech has 14 and Casablanca 11. But the projection is for those numbers to potentially double by 2035.
And what's driving that?
It seems to be Morocco's growing appeal to foreign investors, wealthy entrepreneurs, and people looking for stability, favorable tax conditions, and a good quality of life. Morocco appears to be becoming a magnet for significant wealth.
These centimillionaires often play a big role in value creation globally, founding companies, driving economic growth.
Exactly. So their increased presence could have major positive impacts for Morocco. High-end real estate investment, development of financial hubs, boosting luxury infrastructure.
And presumably indirect benefits for tourism, culture, and the wider local economy, too.
It suggests Morocco is quietly but effectively positioning itself on the global map for the super rich.
And let's wrap up with what could be a truly game-changing development for Morocco's automotive industry, the reported plan for Tesla's first African factory in Kenitra.
Yes. This was announced around April 9th, 2025. We're talking a massive $5 billion investment project aiming to create around 25,000 jobs.
Wow. Where exactly?
On a large 300-hectare site in the Kenitra Free Zone. The plan is apparently for an annual production capacity of 400,000 vehicles.
Including which models?
The popular Model Y, but also significantly, a new compact electric vehicle designed for emerging markets, potentially priced around $25,000.
And Elon Musk himself reportedly cited Morocco's strengths.
Yeah, things like its strategic location as a hub towards Africa and the Arab world, the quality of the local workforce, political stability, and the excellent logistics environment, especially the Tangermed port complex.
This seems like much more than just car assembly, though.
Absolutely. Tesla will bring cutting-edge expertise in embedded electronics, smart batteries, sustainable mobility innovations. It aligns perfectly with Morocco's own green transition goals.
Is there a timeline?
The report suggests construction could start as early as autumn 2025, with the first vehicles rolling off the line by the end of 2027 and hitting the roads maybe early 2028. It's ambitious.
If this goes ahead, it really could be a turning point for the Moroccan auto industry, positioning the country as a leader in Africa's energy transition.
Definitely a huge potential boost. So wrapping up this deep dive, we've really seen the complex interplay between tech advancements, economic shifts, social issues, and international relations shaping Morocco today.
We genuinely hope this analysis has given you, our listener, an efficient way to grasp the crucial issues animating the country right now.
And maybe a final thought to ponder. In this increasingly interconnected world, facing multiple challenges, how can Morocco best balance the undeniable promise of technological progress with the absolute necessity of societal well-being and fairness?
Something to think about. Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon to explore more trends transforming our world.